Hey everybody, what's up? It's Kelly with Choreograph Your Life, part of the KDS Collaborative. Thank you so much for being here today. It's Wednesday. We have made it this far. Cheers to you for taking 60 minutes out of your day to sit down and gain some knowledge and inspiration to help you continue to choreograph your best possible life. Here with me today, I have someone who is a true visionary. He is one of the most creative people that I have ever had the honor to work with, and I'm so excited for you all to gain some knowledge and some tips from him on how to take your passion and turn it into your profession. He is the driving force behind all things live entertainment for Cedar Fair Amusement Parks in the Northern Hemisphere. You guys, settle in. Get comfortable and get ready to have some fun with my good friend and soon to be yours, Clayton Lawrence.
Oh my goodness. I think I'm more excited to be here than you are, but I don't know if that's possible.
Why are you more excited to be here than I am?
I don't know. I flew all the way from California to be here with you.
That is true. And I very much appreciate you being here. This is very nice of you.
And I am so honored to be the first.
The first guest ever.
On the KDS Collaborative. It's been so fun watching you build this whole thing.
Well, I have to thank you very much, sir, for kind of lighting the fire under my own booty to get this thing off the ground.
At what point did I do that?
I feel like there was a moment in time that we were in the throes of the carnival of it all, which we'll talk a little bit more about as we go on, that you looked at me and said, what do you want to do with your life? And I told you, and you were like, well, why don't you go do that?
Just go ahead and do it. Because if there's one thing about you, you're determined and you just make it happen.
Hey, I appreciate that.
And I think we share that.
I agree.
Make it happen.
Just do it. And I think that's why we work really well together.
I agree.
So here we are doing a podcast.
Yes, in your kitchen. And I'm so excited to be here in the kitchen. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
Thank you. Moving from St. Louis to Raleigh.
I know, it's wild. It is pretty here. I'm kind of like, where we live is sort of out in the woods. It's probably not as pretty as where you live in California, but.
It's not. just to be honest.
It's not.
Just kidding. No, there's definitely a fun vibe here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm out in like Cowtown and we have garlic and we have some mediocre wine. No offense to anyone out there in Gilroy, California.
Hey.
But there's a cool edge over here.
I think it's like the whole college town of it all. There's like a lot of young, fun energy.
Yep, we fit right in.
Totally. Let's just jump right into it.
Sweet.
Okay. So, those of you who did not bother listening to Clayton's intro, I'm just going to go back really quickly and tell you that Clayton is basically the driving force behind all things live entertainment in the Northern Hemisphere for all of Cedar Fair. So if you've ever been to a Cedar Fair park, you've seen his work. His work also has really helped just turn the entire entertainment industry at amusement parks on its head. Things are happening different now. Things are way more immersive. Just a whole different kind of entertainment experience. And Clayton, with his background and his passion for all things live entertainment and concerts and experiences that really get the audience involved, has kind of been the driving force behind all of that. So we're going to talk a little bit about that with him today. So what would you say led you to choose your current position or career path?
You know, so my current situation has just evolved. And if we go backwards to when I was a little kid, I was the kid on the street that a lot of people would tell my mom, you need to do something with them. There's something there. And we never knew what that meant. And I fell in love with theater and just live entertainment. And I would grab the neighbor kids and I would like make little shows and use the garage door as a curtain. And I would put up folding chairs and sell tickets to them. And it was just bizarre behavior for a like 8, 9-year-old. So we started to kind of, I don't know, very early on, I loved decorating the front yard for Halloween, for Christmas. My grandparents and my mom always deck out their houses full of like 2,000 Santa Clauses and snowmen. And just really, that's probably the first hint of the word immersion that I've come across in my life is my grandparents' house on Christmas, because every nook and cranny is converted. Like the toilet paper rolls are converted. The Kleenex boxes our snowman. Like
intense.
So immersive. But no, I I just kind of was, I played sports. I wasn't the most athletic. I wasn't the most into it, but.
I've seen you dance. That comes as a surprise to me.
Oh no. That's why I'm behind the scenes, folks. That's why we, the word collaborative is in this situation between Kelly and I, because there's no way, unless there's a drink in my hand and it's late at night. I just kind of was doing these things, and I was kind of, people call me a teacher's pet because I like to run the classroom. I like to decorate the walls. I like would like give the teacher design advice on how to rearrange the room. And
that's
so
fantastic.
All these like weird quirky little things weren't starting to add up until about middle school. And there was my first production that I was involved in. There was a lady there, her name is Darcy Hopper. And she allowed me to be like a production manager, stage manager. And she was a parent volunteer. And it was Schoolhouse Rock Live.
Yes.
And I got to help just be involved in all that stuff. And that was in eighth grade. And so that kind of gave me a dose of theater. I always wanted to be on stage. I always had every intent to be an actor, to be famous. But the only issue that was nagging at me was that I didn't have talent. I can't sing. I can kind of act, but I look back on what plays I've done and they're not the greatest. And I can't dance. So I just realized that my knack in the theater community was going to be behind the scenes. And so high school, that's really where I met a lot of connections. And I was, you know, they didn't have much of a tech program. And they had kids that would volunteer for hours to be ushers. And I just thought one day, if we're going to build a program, let's build a program. And that was my first hint of I really liked building teams and leading teams and producing.
Sure.
So some people think that Great America has been my only job. However, scoop is. I had a job. I had a job for like a month. And it was at Mill Cotton Sporting Goods.
What?
And, yes. And I was in the ski department. And so what happened was when I turned 16, I was like, entertainment, Great America, that's where I want to go. I'll back up a second. One of the things my mom and I did, like every Sunday when the park was open at Great America, I'd buy a season pass, and my mom's single parent and didn't know what to do with me. And so we would, we'd venture out to Great America on Sundays because my mom would say, we got to get there before the church crowd. So the park was empty. And so we would go and she would sit on a park bench and read magazines, and I'd go on all the rides. But then when the park got busier in the afternoon, we would go see the shows together.
Cool.
So that's how I developed my passion for really Great America specifically. And so I kind of, when I turned 16, wanted to merge the worlds. And I was like, wow, I could get paid to do entertainment stuff and theater stuff at Great America. So let's go ahead and do that. But the issue was that they used to do auditions back in November. Mm-hmm. And I turned 16 in December. So I had missed the cutoff, but that holiday season, with a work permit, I could work at 15. So I was at Mel Cotton's and I was in charge of renting skis. Now, here's where things went awry. I would rent out skis and I would wax the skis and snowboards and change the bindings and all the stuff. Now, I swear till this day that I was not trained properly. And
that's what they all say.
There was a slight technical glitch in that one. I've never skied or snowboarded, so I didn't really know what I was kind of doing. But I followed what my leader was telling me to do. But I did happen to forget I don't know if I was ever trained, because I still till this day don't really know what they are. But there's these things on skis called DIN settings, in which I was supposed to be tightening according to the height and weight of the skier.
I feel like this is going down a bad path.
So many skis went out, and people came back safely. But like the store manager subbed in one day and was working alongside me. It was like, hey, did you check out the DIN settings? I'm like, what are those? So he taught me and I went on my merry way, and then I came back and I was fired.
Goodness.
Fired from the Mel Cottons. And that was my first dose of reality in okay, so that didn't go well.
So wait, that's not fair. You didn't know any better. Like, he didn't even give you a
swear,
second chance.
I swear, I don't know. I'm sticking to my story. And my story.
Not a good fit.
So that right there was kind of a defining moment in the decisions I make of, like, I'm not going to let one hurdle or one firing over some din settings on some skis. And, you know, I hate to say this, but skiing and snowboarding was not my passion. So I went and applied at Great America during we have job fairs and we hire by the masses. So I waited like 3 hours and I got my interview, and Andy Giusti, she hired me as a lifeguard. It was the very first year they were building the water park. And so I became a lifeguard and I got to work at Great America, and it was so much fun. And I met so many cool people. A lot of people that were like mentors or like I looked up to, I work alongside of now. And so it was really good. And it was a really good, you know, the theme park world is very, it's like a little community. Mm-hmm. It's a city that runs itself. Mm-hmm. And so I got to learn a lot of aspects of the operation and all that sort of stuff. The water park closed that season, and entertainment had my resume on file from when I applied but missed the cutoff back in November. Uh-huh. And so they needed for the fall time someone to run the slime show and a couple other shows. And so so I got it, and I was a stage manager that year. But then sadly, the year after, they when I had to reapply, they realized I was not 18. So there was a rule that if you were in that level of management, then you had to be 18.
I see.
And so I was like, all right. So I started off as the tech back in entertainment that season, 2005. I met awesome people, role models, best friends. But we were Paramount at the time. And Paramount was bringing in shows, dropping them off, and then they were leaving. And so as people Cedar Fair comes into play, they purchased Paramount Parks, and Cedar Fair had a different model of business. They did a lot of stuff in-house. They had some people create shows from Knott's Berry Farm, but then the parks had to figure out how to build those shows and use resources. The current management at the time, they kind of left,
left with Paramount?
Yeah, so some left with Paramount, and then kind of the next generation came up. Patrick Nalen, he became the entertainment manager, and we worked with each other during when I was the tech at the School of Rock, and Pat was like a tech supervisor. So Pat became a manager, and he really took me under his wing, and we worked really well together. He would obviously run the department as the manager, but then he allowed me to go in and just start being the creative of things.
That's awesome.
And in 2012, I got the opportunity, actually back it up, 2011, I took a full-time manager spot as the admissions, guest services, and cash control manager. And I'd say that out of all the years at Great America, that was one of the highlights because I got to learn the guests.
Sure.
And, you know, we're always so worried about what the guests like in terms of audience, but really to understand what they were making them happy and not happy, or what they were confused about, or they'd show up on my office and mm-hmm. they'd be upset about something, but we'd talk through it and I'd understand dynamics better. And it allowed me to go network with other people in the park.
Well, yeah. And so pivotal to what you do now, because I feel like, you know, with everything that you do and you develop, like, you definitely are always thinking about what is the guest going to like, what is, you know, how will this affect the bottom line, and so on and so forth. And I'm sure, like, that's where a lot of that comes from.
And I think where that knack for me, and when I can trace it back to, like, what was that point in my life where the guests are so important, it goes back to every guest that would show up with an issue. I would just think about my mom, who mm-hmm. was a single mom. She would sit on the park bench. She made it work, and I always just think about, like, you know, with what little money she had at the time, she always made a trip to Great America special. And people who come to Great America are coming, or any of our Cedar Fair parks, they're coming because it's the regional hangout. They feel like it's their home park. It's something that they grab onto and, like, give it a hug all the time. So if they have any sort of issues, usually we could talk it out and get back on track. And everybody appreciates the shoulder to to cry on. Sure. And so that year of guest services really taught me a lot about how to work with the guests and what made them happy and not happy. But then that gave me an outlet to then go, okay, foods department, this didn't work out so well. Hey, over here, rides, this piece of boardwalk is loose. So that gave me a vehicle, that position, to start networking with other divisions in the park.
Yeah.
And so then 2012, I got the opportunity when Patrick left to become the manager. So there were a lot of things that, at the time, Great America was it was up for sale to the 49ers, which is insane. We call those the questionable years of existence. But it taught us all so much. We scaled down from a larger management team to kind of a leaner one. We had multiple hats we wore. But I just took the budget and I looked at things a lot different. And one of the things that people ask, like, what is your knack?
Yeah.
So choreographer, lighting designer, I gravitated towards production management, but I also, scenic was the big thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like things have to be done in a theme park to scale because you're up against roller coasters.
Of course.
And a set is just as important as the lighting because it's visual and the performers. And I really spent some time focusing on the scenic stuff. And then I had such a great team there. And the only thing that I could promise them was a good time. And we would have fun doing all the projects. And then just as they would get comfortable with something, here came another bigger project. And it was just so much fun with this team to figure out what can we do next and how big can we go. And it was at a time where the park wasn't investing in roller coasters because we were up for sale.
Sure.
But the one thing that we could change and do for our guests was present awesome shows and throw big parties.
Yes.
And so we did that. We rolled out Halloween Haunt, and that just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then in 2016, the company was looking to expand the business into times of the year that the parks would normally be closed. And since Great America had better weather than most,
you say,
in the entire time, 2016, they turned to me, and with the team that was rocking and rolling, we built Winterfest, and that was the very first installation. A lot of what we did, we templated, we worked through, we designed, and we put it in a box, knowing that in 2017, it was going to launch at three more parks, and then 2018, another park, and then finally this year, Canada's Wonderland in Toronto.
Wow.
So Winterfest is now international.
How does that feel, like, to look at all of that you've done and just be like, what the, like, how did this all happen?
I don't think about it because I'm on to next year. Like, my brain is on to the next year. But what I will say is this. A lot of people are like, oh, Clayton, you're always on Facebook and you're always showing work stuff and you're always, like, we're confused about what you do in life.
Are you a carny?
You're the ultimate carny. But if I didn't have Facebook and I wasn't documenting, like, Facebook's my diary.
Yeah.
That's how, for whatever reason, I upload photos.
Yeah.
I look at it throughout the day. I keep tabs on everyone. And it's, I guess that's the only, when a shared memory comes up, I go, wow, what?
Yeah.
Look at where we started with this. But, you know, it's not me. And that's the trick to all this, is that it was a collaborative effort.
Sure. Yeah.
Amongst so many people. I mean, like, I was just a piece of it and probably the loudest piece of it in the process. But there's so many, the park managers and the GMs and our corporate teams and just in our guests. Our guests, I mean, after year one, if we didn't get the response we did, then it might have been a question mark.
Of course.
And
of course,
going back to our guests really love everything we do at our parks. And it was the first time that we built something and we came out the gate swinging. Going back to that immersive environment, I got to pretend like I was at my grandparents' house and every nook and cranny was decorated.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we did things that were just unconventional, like change all the food building names for Christmas. And, you know, now we have a Winterfest parade, which we can talk about in a second, but just throwing out the rules of a normal parade, how you think of it. And that's what has made it so fun and exciting and nerve-wracking and edgy and all those things, is that we just look at something and we throw the rules out.
Yeah. That's awesome. How exciting.
Yeah.
It's a good time of life.
That was an extremely long answer to whatever you asked
me. It was such a perfect answer to the question of how you got to be where you are today.
Yeah, so there you go.
Circling back up.
There's my little bio.
There it is.
One day when I'm 60, 65, 70, I'm going to write a book. And there's going to be some Clayton out there that's going to be like, this guy's nuts. There's no way.
Or they'll be like, yes, this is what I want to be when I grow up.
Or I'm a carny as well.
Or they might think you're a carny. Or yeah, they'll think they're a carny as well for sure. All right, next question. How do you choreograph your day-to-day responsibilities with regard to your position or career path? Like what's – to not sound so like stiff about that, what do you do day-to-day?
So let's just back up to how my day gets started.
How's this day start?
Yes, and you guys, I get made fun of all the time about my four sources of information.
Oh,
so I wake up and I read Perez Hilton.
That's still a thing.
That is a thing.
Oh, wow.
But sometimes Perez Hilton is really just the second source of information, which is TMZ.
Okay.
And then I actually read every day religiously Screamscape.com.
Okay.
And that is like all the gossip of the theme parks.
Say that again.
Screamscape.com.
Screamscape.com.
Yes. And they get inside gossip.
Dang.
They have, and it's from every direction.
So like gossip on like who's doing what, or gossip like down to who's dating who?
Not that level. It's who's doing what in the parks. It's a theme park blog. So there's a community out there called American Coaster Enthusiasts. Then we have theme park fanatics, like I was growing up. And then it all filters to this one site. And I've never had the privilege of meeting who runs this, but they get invited to all the park events. They get first scoops of things. They hear rumors out in the world. And so they are always very kind to the parks and cautious that they'll caveat things like this is rumor or this is
confirmed. All right. Okay.
And then the fourth one is usually CNN or local news or just, you know, all the things in the real world.
As one should, I guess.
The TMZ one really started through all the Britney years.
Oh.
And it just, every day I was like, what is Britney
doing?
What
is she doing?
And
what is our girl taking
care
days?
Of her now. And so that one just sucked. Like I read that like four or five times throughout the day and see who's doing what in the gossip world. So those are my four points. I was lucky that after the 2016 rollout at Winterfest at Great America, the company had asked me to become corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I don't oversee. I'm more of a resource to the parks on new launches of products. So I do a lot of stuff independently of researching and kind of building what we like. I take bits of information from what my bosses want and what the parks want and what is the current trend going on. And I see some of those trends in the social media that I wake up to. So I spend a lot of time kind of researching what is cool and stuff and then building those templates. So for instance, like when I'm in a project such as Grand Carnival, that was a year-long process of conversations with my boss and then kind of writing things out and figuring out what resources and that we can use. So I kind of spend my day on a lot of conference calls now because mm-hmm. I'm out in California. And a lot of the parks on the East Coast and Midwest. So yeah, a lot of conference calls, and that really is a chance for us to ask questions and just really make sure that what we're working on is going to work for that specific park.
When you're in California, though, you go into Great America, don't you?
I go into Great America. Yeah. There's some times where I do have a home office.
Sure.
But yeah, I head into Great America, and then I'm also kind of – I oversee Great America in a way. Like I not oversee officially, but I keep my eye on it just because they're always moving with cool new products. But yeah, so I just kind of wake up, get on a lot of calls. I talk to a lot of people. I love managing team. I like – the word managing is something that I've never really used, like mm-hmm. manager or I'm your boss. But the word coach in team sure. seems more appropriate to what we're doing because we need everybody's buy-in on stuff. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of spend the first half of my day doing corporate-y things and then the latter half of the day going to Great America, checking on that park, checking on that team. We've had to work on some big projects over the last couple of months. So, yeah, so it's kind of a half and half.
Sure.
The calls, it's hard because I want to at like 6 p.m. pick up the phone and start rambling about some idea to like Brent, who is my boss, Brent Barr. But then I forget that he's 3 hours ahead. Yeah. Now he's 3 hours ahead in Charlotte. So that's the hard part.
And then there's us that want to call you at like, you know, 9 a.m. our time and then remember that it's actually 6 a.m. and still do it anyway.
It's true. And there's always different shades of Clayton in the morning. That is something I cannot lie and I can't hide is that I'm not a morning person. I am a night owl and I can't turn off work. So yeah. I'm always thinking about what is going on and how to improve it and how to fix it or who's doing what. And I care a lot about the employees that work with us and they're always on my mind. So I spend a good part of the day worrying and also just trying to solve the puzzle sure. that we're trying to execute.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Next question. What factors into your personal and professional goal setting? Like, are you a numbers kind of person? I know you're not a titles type of person. That's not your jam, but what kind of factors into what, you know, makes you feel like, I don't know, you're an influencer or what do you like?
I like to have a vision. So mm-hmm. if someone says we want a parade, I like to close my eyes and see what does the parade look like for us. And then once I could see something in my head, then I start to believe in it. And then I just yeah. go, okay. And I loved taking that image or that vision and then going out and finding the people that we can take along to get this going. I always say that the stressful job's always better with more fun people.
Of course.
And that's a rule I live by. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in the trenches, you might as well be making jokes.
Absolutely.
And having a great time. But getting the team going, sharing that vision, cheering them on, letting them do their thing, checking in with them, being a resource to them. And then when the thing comes together and you get to watch the guests' reaction, like that's my number one rule is pay attention to the guests. So if it's coming out the gate and it's a parade and there's not a million cell phones in the air filming it, or people aren't like waiting to join the party, then I love going back to the drawing board and fixing it immediately, not waiting. Let's figure it out now. Yeah. So I guess my main MO in life is to help identify a creative vision, build the plan to get that vision going, and then the actual operation. And that's the other part too, is once it's open, I love hearing, okay, it looks great today. What is happening in our world a month from now?
For sure.
What is happening by that last show? I expect it to be better than when we opened, not falling apart
right,
and broken.
Things have fallen short, yeah.
So when there are operational hiccups, I love hearing about that because then you can troubleshoot and stuff. So yeah, so I guess the creative vision is something I'm always chasing.
That kind of answered my next question for you is, you know, what makes you feel the most fulfilled? And I know this is me interviewing you, but I'm going to answer this question for you because I have a good story. So when we did Carnival, I will never forget watching you watch Carnival for the first time. Whenever we were there, we were at King's Dominion and it got to where we could see it because, you know, obviously with the parade, you're not going to see it right away unless you're right at the front. And as soon as it rolled down and it was close up, like, and we see all of these little children dancing around and living their best lives and just like watching you be so happy about seeing your vision come to life. Like, I assume that is what leaves you very fulfilled. If that's not what it is, I would love to know what it is because that looked pretty fulfilling to me.
No, it's 100%. And so yes, when a show opens for the guest, it's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
But actually, more importantly to me, when that project comes together and the entire team can take a step back and look at what we did together. And this always happens to me. I always get emotional. It's funny because I I'm not typically an emotional person when it comes to tears and crying and things, but when I have to get up in public and thank people, that's when it hits me, when we realize everything we've done. And so I always get emotional, and it's usually in front of an audience, and I always have this ugly cry. But but I think that me watching Carnival isn't a reaction of, wow, look what we all did together. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that – and then just the guests having a great time is icing on the cake. But it's more about we figured this thing out. And, you know, we thrive on that last-minute pressure of theater. And in theater, we call it Hell Week and the chaos.
And it is real, ladies and gentlemen. Hell Week is real.
You just kind of – throw things at the wall, and you have plans in place, and you hope it all comes together. And when it does, it's the biggest high ever, because you are just, wow, look at this thing.
For sure. Who do you think are some of your biggest mentors or like sources of inspiration?
I've had so many people, and I think that because I've always been honest and vocal about what I've wanted to do, that people have tried to like take me under their wing, or they have taken me under their wing to elevate me to the next level. I love anyone with a can-do attitude. Mm-hmm. I get along with anyone that wants to just roll up their sleeves and go out there.
Sure.
You know, there's been so many people that, like, if I started naming people, I would totally miss someone. But I also have this knack, and I'm sorry to anyone out there that you fall into this category, but like middle-aged women, hear me out. I've always lived like 10 years ahead of myself in maturity. So when I was like a latchkey kid, my mom was working. I had a lot of people like teachers or like Darcy Hopper, Elizabeth Knipe. I had all these people that were moms. Mm-hmm. And I've got to work with a lot of moms out there that they are resilient. If they see a need for something, like we are 25 tickets short from affording the costumes that were rented from whatever, they will just band together and they will go out there and make it happen.
Mom squad.
So yeah. So I think the mom squads out there, even my mom, would figure it out and make it happen, because why not? Like,
yeah.
So I guess not middle-aged women, but mom squads, really taught me anything's possible and just go out there and do it. I always, in elementary school, and again, living 10 years ahead of myself, always appreciated the moms that built the like annual pumpkin festival and got together like in committees and like just ran things. And I always wanted to be part of those. So I think that's where I draw a lot of inspiration from. And then, you know, just everyone on the team, mm-hmm. that we hire and we bring in on projects. Like you know, it's fun. We are so specialized and so niche that the other thing I worry about is making sure like our artists have work, mm-hmm. and we're paying people's bills, and making sure that their personal life doesn't get in the way. And meaning if they're struggling in their personal life and they can't, there's burdens on them. I try to ease those burdens by, hey, we're here, we're having fun. And I always worry about like even actors, like making sure the next show is ready to go to hire more performers. And I always take that on as inspiration, because at the end of the day, we're a business and we're handing out paychecks.
Yeah.
I get a paycheck. So it's always creating enough work for everyone to survive on.
It's really amazing that you say that. And I know there are a lot of people that are very thankful for that mentality from you.
Yes. Yes.
Truly. I mean, obviously us who are contracted to come work with you are very thankful, but I know performers have said that too. And that's just great.
Yeah. And just being a producer, and I'm so grateful for our company Cedar Fair, because they're really kind of turning the ship and reinventing. Again, it's not just me and I'm just a small piece of it, but we're writing the rules out, mm-hmm. there, new rules, and entertainment's on the forefront. So it's very exciting.
It's very exciting. Yeah, for sure. What's the biggest piece of advice that you would give someone who might either want to be in your position or choose this carnival path that we're on, or, you know, wants to do what you do when they grow up, or change directions and do what you do, or whatever?
Yeah, I think, experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this business, the more people you can work with and learn from, the more shows you could be on, the more skills you developed, the more you network. Those are all things like just because you're on one show and you meet a carpenter or a choreographer or whatever, they will break off and go to another place. Mm-hmm. And that's where they'll be like, hey, I know this guy, Clayton over here. We should hire him. So the more experience, the more networking, and just never settling.
Yeah.
Like you have to go into this 100%. And when you've got something perfect, like a set, how do you make that better? If it's a year one to year two, how do you make that product stronger? Going out and experience all levels, like no matter, like there are, our high school director, Elizabeth Knipe, would say there's no small parts. Mm-hmm. And so that's huge. So whether you're brought in to usher and hand out a playbill or whatever, just go out there and experience the theater world. And then theme parks, going into theme parks. And all of you out there listening that don't realize that there are theaters in theme parks and there's more than roller coasters and funnel cakes. And
we love them, but there's more.
But all of you guys out there that are very interested in seeing the two worlds collide. So if you're a theater person and you want to get more involved in theater, a great way is a theme park, because there's so many. We will, like, every event has like 9 shows or 12 shows, yeah, right, Kelly?
Absolutely.
Your legs probably feel that after Winterfest.
Not a lie. I'm still sore.
But so I would just say go out and explore. And then while you're doing that, just start asking questions. Be inquisitive. Be somewhat nosy. Ask who's in charge. And then just figure out what you want to do and figure out who's going to help you do it.
Awesome. What do you think it is about you, Clayton Lawrence, that makes you special to the position that you're in? Like if you weren't there, what would be missing from that moment?
I think that I bring to the table, being in California, being in the Bay Area specifically, a lot of things roll in.
Yeah.
I am subjected to all the trends, all the things, whether it's Broadway rolling in for a tour or it's an arena show at one of the 3 huge venues we have. And then, of course, the Coachella festivals and the EDM world and the nightclubs that are over the top, fully crazy, immersive things in Vegas. I think that I bring a sense of energy that I want. Like, I just want us to look at shows differently nowadays. There's a stigma out there, and even Simon Cowell has said it on American Idol, like, oh, that was theme park material. Well, we need to change that. We need to be like, wow, that was as good as I'm going to see at one of the Cedar Fair theme parks. And so I think what I get to bring to the table is all of my experiences and even social media. I'm in Silicon Valley. So California, Bay Area, Silicon Valley, where my friends growing up now are CEOs and entrepreneurs, or the Valley is just a hub of forward thinking. I think that I bring the social media aspect of it and the current trends, the Britney Spears hot topics from TMZ, and the concert stuff. So I approach things as how big and flashy can we go? And our audiences, 25 minutes or less, and then you got to get out because they're ready to do the next thing.
They got to go. They got to keep moving.
And then just in integrating all the things that I'm subjected to.
Yeah.
If I'm not sharing those ideas and those thoughts and my experiences, then we're not going to be pushing ourselves to the next level. And so that's very, very important to me.
I also feel like, and this is, you probably don't see this as you being the person from California, but there is, in the entertainment world, there is something that there's like a certain level of street cred that people get whenever they can announce that they are from California and New York, because you are exposed to so much more. And that is like a very special thing that maybe, I wouldn't say it's obviously what makes you special for your position, but I think that having that behind you and then also taking that information that you have and being able to translate it into something that, will still make sense to a guest in the Midwest is really important too. Because that's not always the case. Because, yes. You know, it's a different way of thinking. It's a different pace.
But early on in my career, I was told like, oh, this park's not into that. Or, oh, that's a California thing. But the funny thing about that is that a concert, like let's take Taylor Swift. A concert will go through every state.
Absolutely.
Every arena.
100%.
So you're seeing the same thing I'm seeing.
Yep.
So that excuse is no longer valid. Plus social media. People are sharing the same things mm-hmm. at the same time in the same ways. So it's funny that the California stigma, I'm actually, being a lifetime Californian, so interested in all the different regions our parks are in, learning the cultures. And that's something that's really interesting about Cedar Fair is that we are a house of many brands.
Sure.
We all talk about this versus like other corporations where you don't necessarily feel like you're at your home park.
Agreed. Yeah.
You're part of a bigger corporation, which is fine. But I think that us going in and figuring out what makes our park so special has allowed us to apply some of those newer concepts or trends or like inspiration and mold them together to make it feel, to your point, more natural for the environment.
Like it's almost like you have figured out a way to make it happen without people being uncomfortable and thinking like this is not my jam because I'm not from LA or I'm not from, you know, New York City.
Yeah.
Like they don't even realize that it's happening. But I think that you, Clayton Lawrence, do that really well. Like you're able to kind of convince people with, you know, obviously the concert reference or, you know, whatever the case may be, you're able to talk them through it and help them understand why it will work and how it will work without them becoming overwhelmed with the idea of like, California, New York, like these cool people, we're not cool in the Midwest. We are cool in the Midwest. That is no one come for me, please. Beehive.
And I think that somebody a big piece of my life that I have to mention going back to the inspiration would be Jill Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
She is a great collaborator of Cedar Fair. She has a production company that has done shows with Cedar Fair since maybe before I was born. No offense out there. So any ice show that you've seen at a Cedar Fair property, her company, Woodstock Ice Productions, creates and produces. And then all the bike and extreme sports shows that hit all of our parks at one point, that's her All Wheel Sports company. Now, when I was a very young manager in 2012, I would just go to Jill, and I was always in awe of her extreme sports shows because they are exactly the shows I was producing at 8 years old in the front yard with yoga balls and skateboards and stuff.
Do we have footage of that?
We don't, because it's sad because cameras weren't really a thing back then for me.
So bad.
Anyway, they were great shows, by the way.
I have no doubt.
So Jill, I just was always in awe of how she produced these big things. So she is someone just like me that is, why not? Let's do it. Come on. And so when I do go to a lot of concerts with her, and we always take something away from the concert, and then we figure out how to build it with John Tyson, another huge part of my life. And then the third piece of the puzzle for me and all of my support and in the later years of growing is Sean Lee and Lacey Bryant, who, again, they're just people like Catherine Lucas. Now I'm starting to name names and I'm so going to like miss someone, and Desi Hyder, throwing Desi out there. But all these people are can do, let's do it. Hell yeah, let's go. And that spirit in which we were all united really just kept pushing us further and further. And we would go, like, for instance, we all went to Beyonce concert at Levi's Stadium, which, going back to earlier when we were sold to the 49ers, we didn't get sold to the 49ers. An awesome guy named Matt Wimmett came in as CEO, and he made the deal between the 49ers and Great America happen. And so now we're just in this mecca of the entertainment space, and it's awesome to be able to walk next door from Great America to Beyonce and then be inspired by a Beyonce show, which – also, again, tours the world.
Yeah.
So she's presenting something that everybody is seeing. And so one of those moments was when Beyonce comes out with her whole entourage of dancers. And they, all of a sudden, the stage fills with water. And now they're doing this huge choreographed number in water, like in the middle of the arena. And it was just so, holy cow, concert trick. So we applied that to one of our shows that we did at Great America called Vertical Impact, where at the end, it just, the stage floods and John Tyson built this thing and Jill awesome. Got dancers. And so it's just really keeping your eyes open. And,
yeah.
And I don't know. And thank you for all the kind words, but I just wake up and I think about the next thing. And
I wake up, I think, where can I find my Starbucks tea? And then I read some TMZ and I move it on.
And then I'm watching music videos and concerts and YouTube. Like YouTube is actually the quickest way that we can research things.
For sure.
And I am, again, I grew up 5 hours away from Disneyland. So the way I approach stuff is Disneyland is the pinnacle of theme park and that's what everyone is conditioned to believe. I love Disney and they hire the best of the best out there. And so I would go down there and it's funny, like the team at Great America, we would work like a month straight, 12-hour days, create a product, haunt, whatever. And then for vacation, we'd all go down to Disneyland and we'd start looking around and seeing what they're doing.
Because you love it. You love what you do.
Of course. And, you know, I don't watch Disney movies. I'm terrible at quoting and like a movie piece, but they have created what Walt Disney has created, the standard in which we're always trying to live up to. And so we also have, going back to your inspiration and collaborators, I'd say Walt Disney. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't collaborate with him personally.
You didn't?
No, I did not. I do. I've studied his work. But inspiration, because he really, really made people believe that theme parks are the ultimate theatrical productions.
Are you watching the documentary on Disney Plus?
Yes. And
it's fabulous.
I make everyone who will listen to me, I tell them all about it. And it just, it's funny because I got to go to New York like a couple years ago and I'm in Silicon Valley. People all over the world are coming to Silicon Valley to work with people just like them. And so when I go to New York or I go to a theme park and the imaginary story makes me feel like there's other people out there just as passionate and just as nutty and just as crazy about theme parks and shows and all these things. So the imaginary story really makes me feel like I'm not alone.
You are not alone. Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh, can I sing that? I don't think I can sing on these things. Okay. Speaking of theme parks, and as someone who spends the majority of their time, what is your favorite ride or attraction in any park that you've been to ever in your life?
Okay. So that's easy, actually. Can it be a show too?
Absolutely.
Perfect. I'd say Fantasmic at Disneyland.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not.
Okay. Well, so there's this.
Not yet.
Have you been to Disneyland, California?
I have not been to Disneyland in California.
My jaw is dropped.
I've been to Disney World, but I have not been to Disneyland. Again, please do not come for me.
Not the same. Fight me. okay, so let me back up. So in the middle of Disneyland, there's like Frontier Adventureland, and they have this like Tom Sawyer Island. So you have to take a boat or a canoe or you've seen those.
Yes.
Yes. And so you go out on this island and you can play all day long and it's like jungle gyms and play structures and stuff. But there's a little house and then it faces this little lake bay area. And then when you're on the hard park, you can look across the rivers of America and you can see it. So it's cool. What I think is genius about this whole thing is that they built those attractions and then somebody along the lines went, I want the biggest nighttime spectacular this company and the world has ever seen. And I want it to pop up like 2 hours prior to the show, blow the roof off this park. And then I want it to pack away so you never see it again. So when you're on Tom Sawyer Island, there's all these like trap doors and lifts and cool, like awesome tech equipment, but it's all hidden within the show or within the play structures and the set and stuff. And then out in the park in the midway, there's these giant lighting towers that pop out of the ground.
Oh,
and
cool.
There's all this tech and all this stuff. So then when the show happens 2 times a night, and I suggest you YouTube, you know what? We're going to YouTube this and
great.
You're going to get the theme song stuck in your head. But so out pops this magical, like spectacular, and then it packs away and it like it never happened. And to me, that attraction, like I always make sure I have to see it because it's just so crazy. Like,
that's awesome.
Like the thought process. And then I never really researched, and maybe I will now, who walked along and went, this is the perfect space to throw this big thing up. So I'd say that is my favorite theme park attraction in the world, but also I love roller coasters. Mm-hmm. So when I finally got to go to Cedar Point, where as a kid, I would write to them and they would mail me a park map because we didn't really have computers back then.
Oh, I love
that. So they would mail me a park map, and my friend Jared Sisson, we'd like plot and dream about going there. And so there are things that have happened in my career that I go, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah. Like, how did I get here?
Like, how did I get this? And how, I mean, when a celebrity on like True Hollywood Story says, I was born to be a star, you go, oh yeah, okay, whatever. And a director is like, I'm born to do this and I'm born to do that. I truly feel at times when there's that full circle moment of thinking about when I was a little kid working with the neighbors' backyards and making it Magic Kingdom, and I charge everyone tickets to the play structure and stuff. And then I became the guest service manager where I was running the front gate at Great America. So there's these like moments that I go, how the hell is this all happening?
Yeah.
But I was born to be a carny. So in a nutshell, that's I guess that's the light bulb that has gone off in my life.
That's fantastic. So, okay, we went over obviously your favorite show or your favorite. Wait, no, you didn't say what was your favorite roller coaster.
But that's so hard because I view them all like little kids or dogs or pets.
We like them all.
I like you because you're the tallest, and I like you because you're the fastest. I don't like you because you're like the bad kid that nobody.
How do you feel about Millennium? Is it Millennium Force? Is that
Millennium Force is awesome.
I have been on that, believe it or not.
My only bone to pick with these super coasters is that you go super fast. And in bug season, you eat, they're like muffle heads or something, you eat the muffle heads.
Yeah.
But protein. What's really cool, and this is like such a perk of the job, is that when our company launches a new coaster, I get to go on it.
That is pretty sweet.
While we are working on
it. While they're testing it.
Yes, actually, I have done that at Gold Striker.
It's fine. You're here to tell the tale.
Yes. But yeah, so that, and it's funny because... I don't know. Like, now that you asked me that, I love them all individually.
Well, we'll have you back and you can tell us at some point.
Okay.
Great. Perfect. Okay. So who would you say is one of your favorite artists of all time?
Britney Spears.
Perfect. Great. Anybody else?
I do like Madonna, but now I think Madonna's getting nutty. I say that because it's not like... them specifically. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have Britney Spears posters on my walls. I never have. NSYNC maybe, but not Britney Spears. I love the production values. Like, sure. Britney will go out and she will lip sync for her life on that stage, but just the concert experience and the music that she sings.
It's catchy.
I love, like, the one that I would say is most credible for me is Pink. Maybe all the pop females, I love them equally, except for Christina. I'm not a fan.
But not a Christina fan.
No. Sorry, Christina, if you're listening. Call me and we'll do lunch. I don't know. There's just something it goes back to, you could tell who's a nice person to work with and who's not.
She does seem like she could be a little.
A fighter.
A fighter. It goes back to that Dirty video, you know, where she's like in a ring. She's just selling it.
There's a reason why. Okay, so she might be case in point that her voice is amazing. Mm-hmm. Nobody, I mean, damn, she's good. But there's a reason her career hasn't taken off the way it really should have, because I don't know if behind the scenes, and again, True Hollywood Story, I watched Christina, and maybe that's been put doubts in my head.
Maybe.
Anyway, that was such a tangent. But
that's okay.
I love pop female like Gaga and even Katy Perry. And I'd rather see them live. And then I have a rule about concerts. If you go to a concert, you need to see them up close and live, because otherwise you can YouTube that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's hard because I can get into anything. But then there's also the newer stuff of EDM. Mm-hmm. I'm very big into EDM music. But EDM is really... it's funny because it makes you seem cooler than you are, I think. When you're like, oh yeah, I listen to that EDM track.
Can you please explain to the people who are listening who may not know what exactly EDM is, what does EDM stand for?
Electric dance music. Electronic dance music.
Perfect.
Which
a real good time is what it stands for.
Yeah, a real good time. So it's funny because, and I don't think it's a West Coast thing anymore, but no, Coachella and stuff, their music is just, it's just fun and it's not threatening, and it's usually, it has like some sweet message to it all of unity. And, but then they like, you wait for the bass to drop and then it drops and then you hop around and you jump around like an idiot. And then you're like back to like this really you awesome like
burn
message.
Some calories and then
yeah. So I don't know. It's great workout music. And maybe that, maybe I'm attracted to upper music because yeah, I like things that are more high energy, more fast paced.
Cool.
I appreciate a good ballad once in a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is something to be said for our good friend Celine.
Yes.
Coming in hot with, yes, you know, My Heart Will Go On.
Pound that chest.
Whatever. Do you have like a favorite word or phrase or quote or song lyric that you've come to along the way?
Desi always tells me this. Desi is a choreographer at Great America. He always says, Clayton, you always say, just figure it out. And he's like, you always confuse us when you say that. And I realized that me saying, just figure it out is not so much. Sometimes we are in uncharted territory that I don't have the answer and we got to just figure it out. And so I think that's something that I kind of live by is that when a snowball gets thrown at you, you go, all right. Now, who threw that and how do I get you back? Right. So you just kind of roll with the punches. And so that's kind of a catchphrase I guess I've been doing. But
yeah, I guess you do say that a lot. But I think I always, whenever you say it, it's like, okay.
I don't know. Right. It's just, I'm always learning with everyone. And so sometimes they don't have the answer. So just figure it out or we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. It's all good.
Yes.
Cool.
So I'd say that's it.
What's your biggest pet peeve whenever you're at a performer audition?
Performer audition.
Like, because you do a lot of casting.
Yes.
Especially during Carnival. I feel like you were helping with a lot of that.
I would say for all you singers out there, please rehearse your music and rehearse in front of other people and really make sure that the song that you're singing, i.e. anything from Spring Awakening, matches. That's a very specific one out there. It matches what you're trying to sell to us. Because at an audition, you are at an interview, and you're also selling you. And so really take the time, do your homework, and rehearse in front of an audience before you step out in front of a panel. Now, that being said, I've always been very supportive. There's no Simon Cowells in our business. There's no, like, we want to be nurturing and supportive. So, because guess what? Word will get out that you're mean and you're a nightmare and people stop coming to audition for you. So, I would also say dress appropriately. That's something that at a dance call, can you give some insights to this?
Like,
what are your rules for a dance audition?
For a dance audition, I would say, you know, we want to see you do what you do well. I don't want to see what you can't do. Like, I don't need you to tell me that. And I know a lot of times you're learning choreo from whoever's running the audition, but there is oftentimes, I know if I'm running the audition, that I'll ask to see, you know, if you can tumble, or if I'll ask to see if you can do any particular like turn sequences or anything like that. And I absolutely don't need to watch you fall out of it.
Yeah.
Like, don't put that in my head.
The other thing too, for those two, when it's being filmed, you have to think there's a lot of people that are going to see it, meaning that just because there's three people in front of you doesn't mean that the audition stops there.
Correct.
Or you, I guess the other where I'm going at is there's costumers, there's choreographers, there's directors, there's people that are attached to the actual show product that need to see everything. So wow, everyone, look into that camera, sell yourself. So I'd say my biggest pet peeve is this, and this is for all the wardrobe teams out there, is if you are asked to do measurements because you can't go into the park and you can't supply the measurements, please go somewhere that can do it professionally for you, and please do not lie about your measurements or any of your stats, because it is so hard to build costumes.
Truly, though. Like,
yeah. You get labeled as, oh man.
Yeah.
Now we've got to rebuild that whole
I can attest to, you know, in my performer days, maybe fudging my measurements a little bit for the sake of like,
naughty.
Maybe I needed to be a little bit taller for the sake of the role.
No.
Or maybe I need to be a little bit thinner for the sake of the role. And let me just tell you, it never really ends well.
No.
Because when you get there and your costume doesn't fit and they're like mad about it.
Yeah.
Better to bring it just, in.
And the costumers already have a million other things to go on. Yeah. So the last thing they need to do is fix the whole entire costume. So I just gave you several pet peeves, but also really go out there and do your best. And okay, sorry. Second to that one is smile, and just fake it. I mean, I am looking at theme park. We're looking for fun people. And that's the big thing with all this is even when you get cast, you need to know how to be fun. Because if you're not fun, nobody wants to work with you.
Nobody wants to work with you.
And that can be applied to many aspects in life.
Absolutely. So. And you know, like how he was just talking about the audition process really never ends. It doesn't ever really end. Like, yes, maybe you got the job, but remember, there are people there who are watching you and working with you who can maybe refer you to the next job.
Burning a bridge.
Before the audition even happens. Like, how cool would that be to never have to go to an audition again? You have people who are like, I want to work with that person. You know, that person's fun and takes notes and says thank you and asks how they can better themselves and so on and so forth. Like, that's so huge. Like, that's such a good point that you made, that the audition process never stops.
Yeah. And really just have fun. Like, smile. If you step out of an 8 count or you are lost as I would be and just sweating nervously, just start smiling and just make fun of it, because there's probably, especially in the theme park land, when you're coming to a general audition, Cedar Fair has a million shows and all of the managers talk to each other. And just because maybe you had a hiccup here or there, you might be able to pick up another gig that might be just as fun and stuff. So just go out, have fun.
Awesome. Okay. A couple more things and then I'll let you stop talking, because I'm sure your mouth is...
Needs a beer.
Dry. Okay. Can you walk us through the creation of Grand Carnival? Like, how did that start for you?
Yeah, so the execs up top, all the people with the big decisions and the money and all the things to support this idea, they decided that, hey, we want to do something for our guests that was special, kept them in the parks a little bit longer. If you're in the water park, you would maybe drift over into the nighttime and enjoy this party thing. So Brent Barr, who is my boss/coach, he came to me and said, okay, parades are going to be of the future. What do those look like? So I was tasked with looking at different IPs, looking at what kind of, whether we use peanuts in it or if we wanted more of a Mardi Gras sort of thing or a family thing or a DJ party thing. So I built a lot of different scenarios. And built it in a PowerPoint. The deck got shared around. And then I think everyone started collaborating. The GMs, there were 4 parks that got it. And the GM started collaborating. The marketing team started collaborating. And we started to shape what it is we needed this thing to do for our parks and how much money and the budgets and all those things that are important. So we landed on 2 parade fleets. That we're going to do.
The Samba cast and the Rio cast.
Yes. Hashtag Samba, hashtag Rio, which by the way is very important, because then we can tag things and then all the performers can see them. Because as a performer, what I've learned over the years is that I'm out there filming and I'm filming these people and they're like, wait, I want to see that. What do I look like? Or what's going on? So we built, private Facebook accounts, and that's how we get to show them all the fun stuff they're doing. But so again, it goes back to shaped a vision of what it needed to do. Then we start building the teams out. Who's going to do what? We have Lance Heal, who is working on parade floats, and John Taylor. And so we just started to, what was fun about Carnival was it's kind of started with a parade. And then we're like, all right, well, what if the parade didn't stop? Sorry.
The never-ending parade.
What if the parade did stop and we got the guests involved? Yeah. And I...
The experience didn't stop.
The experience. Yeah. And it stopped. And let's throw the parade rules out the door. So it was another full circle moment that when we were building the team, we got to bring on Marilyn Magnus from Disney. Now, Marilyn has retired from Disney. And when she retired, she was the senior vice president of Disneyland Resort Entertainment, which meant she had Disneyland, she had Paris, she had cruise ships, she had some hotels But she, over the last 20 years, has done every parade, creative director, producer on all the parades at Disneyland up to Paint the Night. So I was a huge fan of her work, kind of indirectly, because I love the parades at Disneyland. I just didn't really know she was the person until a couple of years ago. But there was always this one parade that stuck out to me, and it's called Block Party Bash, and the parade would stop, and everyone would party in the streets, and it was this whole thing. And so when we were building Carnival, we were like, that's what we want. We don't want this thing just rolling on by. Also, Nickelodeon, early on in my career, it was like 2005, 2006, the Nickelodeon Celebration Parade, directed by Bob Brandenburg, went around to all the parks, and we had show stops. Cool. And so, again, we knew show stops had to be in the equation.
We love a show stop.
Yes. And then we started just figuring out, okay, now we have a parade. We need to do an event. So the parade was going to be one piece of it. Now, what happens the rest of the event? So we built this whole food festival initiative behind it. And then in those five countries, because we decided to do Grand Carnival because we didn't want to do Mardi Gras. So I went out and looked for each country and how they did Mardi Gras. So everybody does it. Yeah. So Venice, they do the whole Venetian masks, and India has their own. So we kind of researched what each one did. And then someone in the marketing GM world said, why don't we have a carnival? So then we're like, okay, that's our theme for everything. So we just made one big kind of overarching Mardi Gras.
Awesome.
And so we picked five countries, and then we just started, we brought Marilyn in. She was brainstorming with us, giving us a million ideas. And it was fun because we just threw some rules out. So what I was saying is the parade at the end stops, and instead of it just rolling by, we leave the casts out to party with the guests. We leave the floats out because, you know, it's silly to get all these floats, and then it goes by you at a 2 miles an hour, mm-hmm. and then they disappear behind a fence.
Right.
So we decided to leave them out, let them be photo ops, let them be a part of the party. And then we were like, how fun would it be if we had some shows that all the performers were at? So we got this energy. And then how fun would it be to get all 100 and something performers on a stage and then do fireworks? So the creative process there was just kind of, it was being built in real time. The tricky part was building two fleets at the same time. So that was, it launched in the summer at Kings Dominion, Kings Island at the same time. And then we went to Worlds of Fun in Dorney Park. And so it was, what was nice about that was that anything we wanted to tweak and change that was going really well or not so well, we got to do for the next two parks. So that was fun. But when you looked at the parade specifically, I just kind of laid out all the floats and then filled in the number of performers based on what was going to make the float come to life. So in the China Brigade, we had a dragon. So all of the performers were like China warriors who were protecting and defending the dragon. So we took each unit, each float unit, and made a brigade out of them. And then all the performers were just reinforcing the theme and the story of the parade.
Awesome. So, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, again, I would love to say, yes, chapter one, do this. Chapter two, do this. But we're still trying to figure it all out, to be honest. So
it's always agility. It's always growing. It's
agility is a new word I've learned recently.
What do you think? Because I'm sure that, you know, Carnival is obviously one of those, but do you have anyone that you would deem like your most rewarding creative experience? Do you have one?
I would say, okay, so Great America, I forgot what year, turned 40.
Okay.
And so we did an anniversary show. Mm-hmm. And in that show, we brought in video walls. That was the first time we worked with video walls. Uh-huh. And so we have this task of, how do we kind of drum up memories of the park and introduce the park to those who have stepped foot for the first time? So I got to actually write and create a show. When I say write, I mean I would stand over Brian Miller's shoulder, who's out there in life, and Elizabeth Palmer, and I would say, hey, let's write this. Yeah. And then they would actually write it. So shout out to them. But we created the show, and I thought it was really special to the park. Like, sure. We got to use the old theme song to the park, and The narrator of it was actually like kind of my story.
Nice.
And so this whole review was just such a special thing for Great America specifically and for me. I got to kind of tell my journey. One thing that was fun was that Great America kind of had the stigma of removing rides over the years. And so the show is this big party, which goes from like opening day to the 70s, 80s, 90s. And then the show comes to this screeching halt. And then the sappy, we did Thanks for the Memories, but it was just sappy. And then the words In Memoriam come up and everyone's like, what the heck? So then we flashed all the rides that were removed. And that was so cool to watch, like, mom and dad whisper to little kids, like, I used to ride that and I remember
yes.
that. And so then the sappiness kind of sped up and Dolores, our musical director, who's amazing at Great America, shout out to her. Again, another person I probably didn't mention earlier. The music sped up and then those postcards or the Polaroids changed into people that were there in the audience or out in the park that day. So it kind of brought it to the now.
Oh, cool.
And then we kind of sent it off into the future. So
that's awesome.
I would say that one is special to me because it was kind of like my life story on stage.
Yeah.
And it was all the things I remembered,
yeah.
which happened to be what everyone remembered at the park. So.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. All right. We have two more activities that we have to do, and then I'll let you have
a beer. Do I need to stretch?
No.
Activities.
Something that's important to me as a human being and then also pulled into the whole KDS collaborative of it all is, what are you thankful for? Because I feel like it's really important that everyone remember, you know, how they got here, who helped them get there, all of that. Yes. But then like looking back at it and kind of reflecting every day on what are four things that you're thankful for. And I use the number four because I can only work in fours and eights because I'm a dance teacher and that's just like how my brain works. So this is called hashtag thank for. What are four things that you're thankful for today? And you will not be judged on the depth of your answer. And they can change day to day. So that does not have to be like the deepest things of all time.
Okay. I thought I had it, but like now. Okay. I'm thankful for my friends and family.
Awesome.
And all those who are patient with me because along with this job come a lot of sacrifices, whether that's birthday parties you have to miss or family events or functions or life that you have to put on hold. So a big thank you to all of them. Thank you to everybody that I've ever gotten to work with for allowing me or trusting me with either their visions or to lead them or to grow or whatever. So in any work capacity, I'm thankful for Santana Banana the pug, who is always someone I look forward to just seeing because she just wants to see me. Mm-hmm. I walk into some places, sometimes people don't want to see me. They're like, oh no, here he comes.
Oh boy, here he comes.
But it's been fun because she's a puppy and it's been fun watching her grow. And then I'm thankful for you, Kelly.
No, I don't count.
No, Kelly, actually, yes, you do count because until this whole blog has popped up and the kind words that you said to me in the intro, which brought some tears to my eyes, although I think that there was some chili peppers nearby. But no, like seriously, your spirits, your friendship, your laugh, all the things that I know everyone listening to you can relate that you're just awesome. And you have that, come on guys, let's do it attitude. And you're just fun. And again, I'm thankful for you/fun people in life.
Thank you.
And I'm so proud of you for doing this thing because it's cool. And it's an undertaking and you're figuring it out. And I'm sure you don't have a lot of places to just pick up the phone and go, hey, how do I do this?
Hey, well, yeah, I mean, you just figure it out, but I appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say. I am like, that really means a lot to me, even though you can't tell because my forehead doesn't move because I have so much Botox in it right now.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Kelly, today for my birthday, got me Botox.
Yep. Happy birthday.
So this is what happens. This is what happens during...
Get you a friend that Botox in your face.
Behind the scenes of Grand Carnival is like a lot of late nights, a lot of funny conversations. And one of them was, yeah, I need to get some Botox. And then I was like, hey, that sounds like I should probably do that one day. And Kelly and I collaborated. And today it's my birthday celebration. And she got my Botox.
So we did it.
That story went nowhere fast. And there was no like punchline because
I don't know. I feel like the punchline is that you did it.
Yeah,
you
overcame
your fear of needles.
I did it, and I am ecstatic, and I'm also currently with my face excited, and I'm scared. And
he looks perma excited right now.
I got cement in the forehead.
So next time you see Clayton and he looks excited to see you, you might want to second guess that. It might just be his face.
I cannot believe we're telling
that Nate, the millions of
the
listeners.
Nation. Because I feel like this is going to get picked up and we're going to, yeah. And I'm going to get to rehearse my signature.
Oh, my absolutely. Autograph. Yeah, definitely. All okay. Right. So we did our thing for. So last thing. This is called This or That.
This or That.
Is just a fun little thing.
Do I just say this or that?
No. I'm going to read you a question and then you have to answer. For example, Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi. Oh, Coke. I hate Pepsi.
Facebook or Instagram?
Facebook.
Marriott or Delta?
Delta.
Ooh.
Wait, what did you just say?
Marriott or Delta?
Oh,
you
Delta.
Love both things.
I love both
These
things.
Are very Clayton Lawrence okay. specific, this or
but
that.
But the thing is that, okay, so my rule is always travel, and I'm traveling a lot. Always get the first flight out in the morning and because the airplane's there and stuff. But Delta, their service is awesome, and they – like Marriott, you go to the front desk, you get your key, or now you can just go to your
room.
Yeah,
true.
But Delta, the customer service, and like you really do feel like you're being taken care of and that there's somebody that's like making sure you're okay versus the Marriott, like you get to skip that interaction. So yeah, there's that.
Okay, great. Beer or wine?
Ooh, wine.
Disney World or Disneyland?
Land.
Okay. Winterfest or Carnival?
Oh.
Boo. Pick your favorite kid.
I would say.
Are you allowed to? Can you legally answer this question? Or
I don't know.
Let me call.
Let me call a friend. Phone a friend.
Call a team.
I don't know. I say Winterfest.
Okay. Okay. Ariana or Taylor?
Ooh, Taylor.
Okay. Main dish or side?
Side dish.
Good answer. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Clayton Lawrence. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
For being my first guest.
Yes. And so real quick, I'm going to give a shout out to my Instagram because I'm trying to be
a
follower.
Please, please
just
do.
Like KDS Collaborative. My Instagram, which you can see some of my silliness and work because I've been inspired by Kelly to do a travel blog. And so my Instagram is, ready for it?
I'm ready.
Clayboy Mansion. So that's Clayboy Mansion. And I want to be an influencer just like Kelly. And so... yeah, thanks again for having me. And this is probably the silliest hour of my life, but
it's been so fun though. We've had a great
time. Excited.
Well, we hope you guys are all inspired and I look forward to catching up with you next week, Wednesday, for the podcast. Have a great day, everybody. Woo!